This is Eat Out In. Well, it's almost impossible to imagine what the Australian food landscape would look like without Stephanie Alexander. Stephanie has transformed the way Australians eat, from her groundbreaking restaurant Stephanie's to her best-selling cookbooks, including the much-loved Bible, The Cook's Companion. When Stephanie talks about food, people listen. Now, as much of the population emerges from a long winter of lockdowns, Stephanie has released another cookbook exploring a place we've spent a lot of time in, home. Her new book is called Home. And Stephanie joins me now. Stephanie, welcome to Nightlife.
Thank you, Indira.
Great to have you, and very excited to get my mitts on this new tome of yours. There's always something that you can learn from one of your books, some really important little recommendations and bits of advice. That's why they've become so loved. So, Stephanie, I mentioned, you know, your book's called Home. We've been spending a lot of time in our homes. Can you describe what your experience has been like in your home during this period of closures and lockdowns in Melbourne?
Yes, well, even though it seems unlikely, people won't believe it, I did not start this book during lockdown. Mm. It was actually started long before COVID, we had actually ever heard of COVID. So although it now seems like a response to our circumstances, that really wasn't the genesis. But there's no question that over the last 18 months, my own life has moved on to being a lot more home-centred. For lots of reasons. I mean, I've backed off a little bit from the actual operational part of the Kitchen Garden Foundation, although I'm still the founder and still very involved. Mm. So I found myself cooking a lot, as I've always done anyway, but collecting ideas based on the home kitchen. And I also find that I'm always interested in the story behind the recipe.
Yes, because it's the stories, really, that's what a recipe is, isn't it? It tells the story of a family, of a culture, of a particular person's kitchen.
Exactly. And over a very long lifetime of cooking and eating, I really have always warmed to experiences where I do get to learn something. As you say, you learn something about where you've been, or you remember a dish because of you remember where you were, or what somebody said to you. And those things make it live to me. And I loved the opportunity, which was given to me by my publisher, who said, write reflectively, let it all hang out. And I thought, wow.
Yeah.
What an invitation. And so I did.
Look, I think, Stephanie, you know, when we've caught up and talked over the years, you're very similar to me. I mean, my memories are all connected to food. So when I think about traveling somewhere or I think about catching up with someone, the thing I remember is what we ate, what I tasted at the markets.
Yeah, are those markets? You know, you can close your eyes and there it is, that you can remember the market all over again. And of course, we do live in a pretty much a food paradise here in Australia, so that there's not very often that there's something you remember from some travel experience that you cannot find and cook for yourself to bring the memory back.
Mm. And how was it for you while you had these, you know, restricted circumstances, like a lot of the population did in Australia over the last couple of years, and you wanted to experience, you know, an Asian herb or a European delicacy? How did you deal with that when you wanted to cook a dish or relive an experience?
I had no problem because, of course, we were allowed to visit food stores, and where I live, I'm very fortunate to be close to a couple of outstanding food providors. I didn't go in for much of the home delivery stuff. I actually preferred to use it as my exercise thing by walking over to the food provider and having the experience of, well, the mind blast as much as just buying things for myself, but, you know, looking at all the beautiful green things, looking at everything. And I'm with a family of one with a bubble daughter visiting. There's a limit to how much I could eat, but it didn't stop me. It didn't stop me buying far too much, cooking far too much, giving food away, putting stuff in the freezer, I hate to admit. But the other thing was that during the worst of the lockdowns, I was editing this manuscript. And my editor lives 300 kilometres away, so mm-hmm. It was all done digitally. But I really had a really big task to do during lockdown, so I had very busy days. So I didn't sort of languish really.
Wasn't much time for rumination, I guess. So, you were occupied. So, how do you think? I mean, again, it's just very fresh out of lockdown for you guys. But how do you think what we've been through? Most of the population of Australia went through some form of lockdown. How do you think that's going to change the way we look at food and look at cooking, even look at home?
Well, of course, I'm not a statistician, and I'm sure there are people who are going to investigate this thoroughly, but there does seem to be a general feel that more and more people have cooked more at home. There's no question that people are ordering in from restaurants. I mean, I live in an apartment and I see the boxes and delivery people that are evidence that more and more people are doing that. I would like to feel that people have got a bit of renewed confidence in cooking for themselves. I don't know whether I have any evidence for that. It's just a wish, really. I feel excited, but I also feel apprehensive, and I think that's probably a fairly general feeling. You know, the whole idea of fighting the hordes to get a restaurant booking makes me not want to do it at all. I'll get over that, but I have to sort of work through that. It's sort of coming back to reality is not, it's, for me, it's not just plunging in. I feel I have to think about it and be a bit tentative.
Dip the toe in. Test the water.
I think so. And I don't know whether that's my age, but I've spoken with even my daughter, who's young, obviously much younger than I am. She says she's feeling a bit tentative too. So
that's understandable.
We've all had a long, long, long year in Victoria.
Yes, it seems to have never stopped, really. It just carried on. But it's looking rosier, that's for sure, with the vaccination rates going up. So, Stephanie, getting to your book, Home, it contains, as you mentioned, a wealth of stories and meanderings through your many food adventures. When you look back, particularly at your time setting up and starting Stephanie's, your restaurant, and then what you saw through the 70s and 80s until it closed 21 years later in the late 1990s, what were the biggest changes you saw during that time in the way Australians cooked and ate?
Well, I think that the development of specialty produce in response to food media was a very definite phenomenon, which was observable. And I mean, I think I have to say I claim a bit of the credit, but not alone. But it was the beginning of some sort of food media where it wasn't just commissioned people just going to write about a local restaurant and then getting paid for it. It was serious food enthusiasts getting involved in commenting. And it did, and including myself, and I mean, I had a column in the Good Weekend, the very first issue of Good Weekend, and for many, many years after that. And I think we were able to develop that you could talk about something like, well, I can remember the first one that is the one that sticks in my mind, was me talking about my enthusiasm for soft-leafed salad leaves, which quite frankly did not exist in 1978 or whenever it was.
Yeah, because it was probably all iceberg.
1982.
Yeah.
Well, that was all there was. And I don't have any problem with iceberg, but I do have a problem with when it's the only option. And I had, was reasonably fresh from France, where I had loved those little soft floppy mignonette lettuces.
Or mash.
And I just, and I just felt we ought to have that available. And so certain growers took up the challenge. And firstly, there were just small people who would be growing all these special things. And of course, inevitably, that niche, the big growers saw these little people getting this restaurant business. And so that by now we've all got the benefit, I suppose. I don't know how the little people ended up feeling about it, but certainly we all now have absolute choice of, God, so many different sorts of salad,
prickly, we're spoiled, bitter, aren't we?
Soft, purple, and then that sort of demand was definitely created by good food media. I suppose the other big difference that I would feel that I'm seeing is that in my years of being in the restaurant business, we really were, to some extent, I don't want to sound as if I'm too smarty pants, but we were in a way educating people about a different way of eating, that you didn't have to have just one giant plate with a massive T-bone steak falling off it and beetroot or something. You could actually have a meal that had smaller components and two or three different things, and that was an enjoyable way of eating. And we had to educate people for that idea. There was pushback. Where are the potatoes? You know, there's got to be potatoes with everything. Well, you know, don't have to be potatoes with everything. And and so there was a bit of pushback, but again, that won through, so that we've now moved on even further. And so we have more and more young cooks, particularly being more and more experimental. But I think we had to get the public to understand that there was more than one way of enjoying a meal. And of course, the thing that was also happening was the development of small ethnic restaurants as our migration patterns changed. And that was wonderful for everybody.
Stephanie Alexander is with me on Eat Out In. We're talking about her wide food background experience, her extraordinary contribution to Australian food scene, and she's got a new cookbook out. It's called Home. Stephanie, that restaurant, the incredible alumni that it spawned, I mean, today they are the leading lights in Australia's restaurant industry. People like Yanni Kritsis and Annie Smithers, Neil Perry. I mean, it's extraordinary, isn't it, when you look at the family tree from that restaurant?
Yes, the family tree, my goodness me. And a lot of people from front of house, a lot of people who worked in the bar, some of them were brief, fleeting moments, but other people stayed working with me for several years. And it is not at all uncommon for me to go into a restaurant. Well, it is actually extremely uncommon for me to go into a restaurant. But we went backwards 2 years, and I went into a restaurant in Melbourne. It was very common that somebody would say, I worked for you at Richmond Hill Cafe and Larder, or I worked for you at Stephanie's restaurant. And mostly I remembered them with pleasure. Occasionally I had to scratch my head and think, oh, I don't quite know that I remember that one. But look, it's a thing I'm very proud of, and I do sort of have that sort of mother hen feel about it.
Yeah.
And as you've the people you've mentioned remain very, very close friends. And whenever we get together, there is always a bit of a nostalgia and a bit of reminiscence about past days.
Yeah. Why do you think Stephanie's was so influential?
Well, it was different. It was really, I had a very strong, very passionate belief in that it would be a good idea to introduce people to the idea of multi-part meals, and that hospitality was the name of the game, being welcoming. The grand restaurants that existed in Melbourne before I opened Stephanie's were a bit stiff. They were very formal. I don't want to put anybody down, because they were excellent in their way,
yeah.
Absolutely excellent, and trained some wonderful people. But I tried to make it sort of more a sense that you are coming into my space, into my home, and I want you to feel valued, and I want you to have lovely experience. Pleasure has been at the heart of every food experience I have done, whether it be writing about food, whether it be running a restaurant, whether it be introducing the Kitchen Garden Foundation, where pleasure is the, you know, we say pleasurable food education is what it's all about.
Yes, it is critical, that word pleasure. And as you mentioned, home has been this running theme for you. You know, you want your restaurants to make people feel that they're coming into your home. Your latest book is called Home. It has 200 new recipes or so. There's a zucchini carpaccio that I've got my eye on that I'm definitely going to try. What did you want to celebrate, Stephanie, with these recipes?
Well, just flavour, I think. Flavour. And getting the best out of your ingredients. And not overcomplicating, which doesn't mean that everything is as simple as the zucchini carpaccio, but there are plenty of recipes in the book that are very, very simple. But the recipe I was going to talk to you about was a spicy fish with Moroccan flavours and green olives, and it's got lots and lots of flavours in there and lots of interesting different textures and so on, but ends up being a delicious dish for entertaining. And it's one of those things that you do half of it beforehand and 20 minutes in the oven, 20, 25 minutes in the oven, and it's on the table. And that's my idea of entertainment.
Mm,
you know,
all right.
We can spend 3 days in the kitchen.
Yeah, well, we'll come back to the recipe a little bit later and we'll get more details and tell people how they can get their hands on it. But I wanted to ask you about your Stephanie Alexander Kitchen Garden program. It is and has been so influential for a generation of children. Now, I do a number of you know, workshops myself through my edible balcony work, growing food in small spaces around various cities. And so many of the youngsters I come across have had their first experience with growing food at schools through your program. It has been extraordinary. It's now, what, in 1,000 schools around Australia. That must make you feel very proud.
It's in fact more than that, because
we also
have a big impact into early learning centres, where, you know, with 3 and 4 year olds,
yeah,
and we have a few pilot secondary schools that are involved, which are being funded, in fact, by AstraZeneca. I mean, it's just interesting that we've obviously, because we don't have currently federal funding, we rely very much on philanthropic and corporate assistance in order to keep going. And so there's 1,500 schools and learning centres that are involved in the Kitchen Garden Foundation at the moment. It's been very difficult because many schools in different parts of the country have been closed at different times, so that the people who are managing the gardens and managing the kitchens have had lots of challenges. We've tried to pivot to develop activities and resources that can take parts of the program home, such as you were talking, balcony gardens or creating a little garden at home, which works for some people and doesn't work for others.
Mm.
But all the time we've been keeping the enthusiasm going. And now that the schools are going to reopen, we're gearing up again to sort of say, wow, we'll be able to visit schools again. We'll be able to offer some professional development again, which has all had to be curtailed dramatically during the lockdowns.
Mm. And Stephanie, we know, I mean, my generation grew up with a disconnection from food, from growing food. This generation, through your program, has been so fortunate to be getting that exposure at a young age.
True. I'm a great one for sort of saying yes, yes, but. And the yes, but is, it's fantastic, but there are a lot more schools that could get involved that haven't yet. I think it's one of those things that is a basic right that children should learn about food, should learn about the environment, should learn, you know, how to look after themselves, how to become independent. And I would love to feel that we can one day get that this is considered by the government to be an essential part of the school program for every Australian child.
Mm, absolutely. Hear, hear. Totally agree with you on that one, Stephanie. Now, coming to your recipe, on Nightlife, we ask all the chefs and cooks that join us to share a recipe of theirs that people can replicate at home. On our Nightlife website, we've got recipes from Rene Redzepi and Jamie Oliver and Yotam Ottolenghi. So it would be an honour to have a Stephanie Alexander recipe in that collection. So you mentioned earlier it's a fish dish you'd like to share?
The dish is terrific because you make the tomato sauce, which is the base of it.
Mm.
You can make it the day before or the morning. You put half the sauce in this dish. I've got one of those fabulous cast iron La Creuset wide dishes that has a very tight fitting lid. Then you put your chunks of fish just into the sauce, cover them with a little bit more sauce, cook it for about 25 minutes, and then it is scattered with sliced green olives and slices of preserved lemon.
Yum.
And served with probably either rice or couscous, whatever you felt like. And the tomato sauce has, of course, cumin and coriander and a bit of chili, and it's spicy and delicious but not scary.
It sounds wonderful. Yum, delicious. And as you said, it's so important to have these dishes in our repertoire that we can prepare partially beforehand so that we can spend time enjoying our guests and our evening, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us on Nightlife, and it's always wonderful to have a chat to you and sharing all your wonderful experiences and knowledge, and all the best with the promotion for your new book, Home.
Thank you very much, Indira. It was very enjoyable.
Stephanie Alexander, a chef, restaurateur, a school educator. There's nothing really in the food business that she hasn't done. Her new book is called Home, 200 Wonderful New Recipes. And her recipe for that Moroccan fish dish you will find on our Nightlife website.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.